In Bitcoin's case, the novel technology provides energy producers a radically new way to monetize energy. And as a result, it will permeate every energy production site across the globe. This will push down the profitable price of energy for all miners, driving more energy efficiency as wasted, stranded, and renewable sources with near zero or below zero energy cost are sought out to power mining facilities. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible, the place where you earn your PhD in all things Bitcoin. And I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else. You know, we have another great read from Bitcoin Magazine, and this is from a first-time author to the show, Evan Bayless, who apparently has some personal experience in Bitcoin mining and the economics and concerns around the energy consumption of the Bitcoin network. It's really cool to have his perspective and like kind of break this down. And this is just a great piece on the energy FUD and the deep ignorance that is being blasted about Bitcoin right now. So we have today's article, Bitcoin Will Save Our Earth. I want to thank our two amazing sponsors real quick. The Bitbox O2 hardware wallet from Shift Crypto for everybody who loves their keys. I've been getting some feedback on Twitter for a couple of people recently who used it and have just loved the simple setup and the UI. So thanks for the feedback. I love that. And check out, if you don't have your open source secure hardware wallet, grab your Bitbox at guyswan.com/bitbox. And Swan Bitcoin, that's Swan with one N like the bird. SwanBitcoin.com/guy for my referral to start your auto Bitcoin savings plan. If you have not set it up yet, do so now. If you have set it up, you should probably go in and increase how much you're buying every week. Let's go ahead and get into today's read. I do get a little aggressive in the rant afterward. Cut me some slack. You know, this line of criticism against Bitcoin, I think, is just that Bitcoin is just some massive net earth destroying thing, I think, is so painfully ignorant and honestly incredibly mentally lazy that I just lose my patience easily. So bear with me if you're on the fence about this topic, but if you have already dug into this topic and are just looking for some confirmation bias ranting post article, well then enjoy. So let's go ahead and jump into today's article, and it's titled Bitcoin Will Save Our Earth by Evan Bayless. By using energy to validate transactions in a way that is independent of any existing grid or source, Bitcoin mining will save the climate. It's in vogue to think that Bitcoin is accelerating the climate crisis. The common argument is that Bitcoin uses lots of energy, which must mean more carbon emissions. So as a result, it's ruining the climate. Of course, critics also seem enraged at Bitcoin itself, believing it doesn't do anything useful beyond facilitating a casino for Reddit meme lords and, quote, libertarian nerds to get rich in. To these critics, Bitcoin is a totally useless, degenerate system that will end up consuming all energy on the planet in 18 months if we don't stop it right now. While this fatalist prediction might succeed in earning clout on Twitter, it is fortunately far from the truth. Incredibly far. In fact, if I may do some clout chasing of my own, the prediction that Bitcoin will destroy the climate is the literal opposite of what Bitcoin is likely to do. Bitcoin will save our Earth. By the end of this read, you will understand how Bitcoin uses energy to validate transactions, and how this is driving more efficient energy usage and lower emissions for the entire global energy grid, not just the Bitcoin system. Why does Bitcoin need energy? This is the first part that confuses many people, because Bitcoin is a novel type of monetary technology which has no analog. Importantly, Bitcoin is not Visa or PayPal, and it uses energy for different purposes. Bitcoin requires energy in order to secure the history of transactions. A recipient of Bitcoin can reasonably trust that the Bitcoin they've received is really theirs because miners expended energy, and therefore incurred an unavoidable real-world cost, in order to fit that transaction into a block of transactions and hitch it onto the blockchain. We call this strong assurance that a transaction is completed, finality. If you take out that energy expenditure, there is no cost associated with changing a transaction. The original sender could decide later to change their transaction so it points to another one of their wallets instead of your wallet. Poof! Now you never got paid. Or maybe the money is in two places at once. That just won't fly in a monetary or payments system. This little copy-paste problem is known in nerd circles as the double spend problem. Bitcoin is the only system which solves this problem at scale without a trusted third party, and energy usage is the key component of that solution. The more energy that Bitcoin consumes, the more cost is incurred in securing the chain. More security means an attack on the history of transactions is more expensive. So expensive that double spending is uneconomical or downright impossible. The more cost incurred to secure the chain after your transaction, the more final that transaction is. More energy consumption equals more security. Many critics argue that the Bitcoin energy consumption per transaction compared to a Visa payment proves the horrible inefficiency of the Bitcoin network. This plays on our assumption that a transaction is always something small, like buying a cup of coffee. However, a transaction can also be a group of these smaller transactions, a batch, so that one transaction on a payment system like Bitcoin or Fedwire can actually represent millions of coffee purchases. Critics of Bitcoin's energy use also miss the key point of why Bitcoin uses energy. Bitcoin is not just a payment system. It is also an entirely new form of scarce, divisible, portable commodity, aka money. Bitcoin consumes energy primarily to ensure the scarcity of Bitcoins and finality of transactions without a trusted third party. Other monetary systems like the US dollar achieve scarcity and finality, key properties of money, through trust. You and I need to trust politicians and bankers to be good stewards of the monetary system. We entrust them with the power to literally create currency out of thin air, and they have the power to reverse or block transactions. Most of these gatekeepers are not elected officials either. They are the chairmen and employees of central banks and commercial banks, and they create new money and allocate it as they see fit, fiendishly. New money is created every time a government sells bonds to its central bank or banks extend loans, which is often, especially in 2020. Trusting these gatekeeper elites doesn't seem to be working out in this day and age. In fact, it hasn't worked out for very long in any large-scale system that put too much faith in central planners. Bitcoin replaces people carrying biases, blind spots, and sometimes malice with a set of coded rules and energy usage, leading to more fairness in the monetary system. Instead of Google's "don't be evil" credo, we can now achieve "can't be evil" when it comes to governing the monetary system. The laws of physics apply the same to every human being, regardless of race, creed, wealth, or social standing, and those rules govern Bitcoin. You might still think Bitcoin doesn't matter, that it's just a stupid casino for Reddit dwellers, and that's fine. Arguing that isn't the purpose of this piece. I have plenty of other material explaining why Bitcoin matters. But as you'll see after the next section, even a stupid casino can save the planet. Does more Bitcoin energy consumption help or hurt the climate? Now that we understand why Bitcoin needs energy in the first place, we need to address the question of whether Bitcoin's energy consumption helps or hurts the climate. Many Bitcoin detractors love to play on your assumptions that more energy use is categorically bad for the environment, but that misses many nuances of how energy is produced and consumed. To approach the question of Bitcoin's climate impact, we first need to understand Bitcoin mining as a business and the need that miners have for energy. I spent about 6 months in 2018 building a business plan, running financial models, visiting potential mining sites, and fundraising for a 10 megawatt mining facility in the United States, so I have some limited experience on this subject. If you remember the concept of perfect competition from your Econ 101 class, Bitcoin is about the most perfectly competitive market that the world has ever seen. It is incredibly hard to get an edge or advantage over any other miner because the components to mining are very simple: powerful computers and cheap energy. The Bitcoin protocol doesn't care about mining company brands or logos, and it doesn't offer anything differentiated that one miner can provide but others cannot. Competition between miners consistently shaves away at the profits any miner can make. As long as a miner can find energy cheap enough to mint Bitcoin at below market price, they have an incentive to start up a mining farm. When the Bitcoin price increases rapidly, this means even more energy sources become profitable to hook up miners to, until new mining operations, quote, soak up this excess profit. This means miners are always forced to either pray for higher Bitcoin prices, upgrade the efficiency of their mining equipment, or find cheaper energy sources. Praying for higher prices. Bitcoin doesn't listen to prayers, as anyone who has traded it knows, so praying for a price rise is not a very reliable solution. Besides, rising Bitcoin prices bring an incentive for new and existing miners to expand their operations and increase the hashes, the guesses at the Bitcoin mining game, they're producing. That in turn causes difficulty to rise yet again. Upgrade mining hardware efficiency. More efficient mining hardware only comes out once every few years, and improvements are slowing due to the laws of physics making it harder to fit more processing power on a chip. Semiconductor companies have noted for years that Moore's Law is slowing down, meaning it is taking longer to double the number of transistors on a chip. Today, it is incredibly expensive to develop and produce more efficient mining chips, requiring years of research and development and millions of dollars to test and tape out new chips with major semiconductor manufacturers like TSMC in Taiwan. Cooling equipment, i.e. fans, also draws a lot of power, so more efficient cooling solutions can improve overall mining efficiency, but there's a ceiling to that improvement as well. We'll expand on the role of cooling later. Both more efficient hardware and more efficient cooling solutions lead to turning the same amount of electricity into more hashes, contrary to the common criticism that only, quote, the most power-hungry computers make a profit. It is the least power-hungry computers that make the most profit. Find cheaper power. Power is essentially the only variable cost for a miner at scale. Seeking cheaper power is about the only thing that can save a miner when the Bitcoin protocol begins to squeeze a miner's profit. The miner may move their machines to a new location with cheaper power, or be forced to shut down and sell their machines to someone else who has access to cheaper power. Either way, profitability is regained, and the average cost of power used to secure the network is pushed lower. The most important ongoing factor for a mining operation is simply power cost. This has very important implications for climate change and emissions, because it means Bitcoin mining is forced to find cheaper and cheaper power sources over time. Critiques of Bitcoin energy use and climate impact today focus on estimating Bitcoin's existing uses of power, especially during bull markets when miners have large profit margins, while ignoring the long-term trend implied by the functioning of the protocol and the evolution of energy technologies. Thankfully, cheap energy fit for Bitcoin mining is increasingly not found in fossil fuels, but in renewables, wasted, and stranded sources of energy, as we'll dive into next. Bitcoin improves energy efficiency and promotes renewables. Energy consumption by humanity correlates well with GDP and quality of life. While correlation is not causation, it's easy to reason that more energy production allows us to give to machines more of the back-breaking labor that supplies food, shelter, clothing, and other creature comforts to us. That at least affords us the opportunity to improve our quality of life, if only in material ways. However, it's no secret that energy production can have unwanted consequences in the form of pollution or local and global ecosystem changes. Knowing what we know about Bitcoin's mining dynamics, what can we learn about the types of energy that Bitcoin is likely to seek out and its resulting impact on the environment? Cheaper renewables. Now that we understand why the Bitcoin network will always seek cheaper energy over time, we need to look at the cost of energy by source. The investment bank Lazard produces an analysis of energy costs by source annually, which is widely considered an industry benchmark. Data from its 2020 report below. Thankfully, renewables are on par with or cheaper than conventional energy sources at industrial scales. This holds true in most places around the globe, and the trend is getting stronger. This means Bitcoin miners will necessarily seek out renewable power as time goes on, especially excess capacity or overproduction that leads to even lower prices. Mining also provides developers of renewable power sources with another potential income stream, helping push progress on the learning curve of various renewables and accelerating further cost reductions. Wasted energy. Besides seeking cheap renewable energy, the portability of Bitcoin mining hardware versus other power consumers, like your home or the city you live in, means it can take advantage of power that would otherwise be wasted. One example of currently wasted energy comes in the form of flared natural gas. Unfortunately, we still need to power our cars and planes with oil until Elon Musk can create a hive mind of self-driving Tesla pods. Given that, explorers looking for oil often hit pockets of natural gas while drilling in remote locations. Oil is expensive enough that it's profitable to put it on trucks and drive it from these remote locations to where that oil is refined and pumped into your car. But transporting natural gas is often not economically viable from these locations. Companies can either release the gas into the atmosphere or literally burn it off. They flare it, which is what governments usually mandate them to do in order to limit environmental impact. This natural gas is both stranded, too far from energy consumers to be useful, and wasted because it cannot be stored once the drill hits it. This gas is a liability to the driller who hits it because it doesn't produce any income and it actually costs them money to flare it safely. Bitcoin mining turns flared gas into an opportunity, however. Instead of simply burning off the gas, drillers can use a gas generator to power a portable box of Bitcoin miners, turning previously wasted energy at a remote oil well into Bitcoin. These drillers don't even need to care about Bitcoin to find this useful. They can just sell their Bitcoin immediately to make an income stream off of gas that they previously had to burn off. Companies like Upstream Data, Crusoe Energy, and Giga Energy are pioneering this field. This energy usage improves the security of the Bitcoin network without causing any additional harm to the environment. In fact, part of the revenues from this type of mining could be applied to filtering flared gas exhaust, leading to less environmental impact. Stranded energy. Bitcoin mines are the least location-dependent consumers of energy on the planet. As a result, they can easily use energy sources that are, quote, stranded, far from current population centers, like ocean currents or desert sun. These sources either aren't economically viable to develop at all, or have the potential to produce more power than the existing nearby consumers can possibly use. Bitcoin mining presents an income stream that helps bootstrap funding to develop these stranded energy sources. Once energy production is up and running, these cheap sources of power can be a draw for other power consumers, like data centers, factories, even people, to locate near them. For many miners, a large percentage of their power cost goes towards simply cooling their machines. However, this cooling cost can be significantly reduced just by putting miners in very cold climates, which are often far from population centers and likely to have excess renewable power that's stranded too far from enough consumption to match production. Bitcoin technology and mining company Bitfury utilizes this confluence of factors as well. Quote, many data centers around the world have 30 to 40% of electricity costs going to cooling, explains Valery Vavilov, the CEO of Bitfury. This is not an issue in our Iceland data center. Why the biggest Bitcoin mines are in China, Spectrum 2017. Iceland's energy production mix? Almost 100% renewable, with an estimated 73% coming from hydropower and 27% from geothermal. Iceland is known for having more energy resources than it can consume locally, leading to big booms in energy-intensive industries like aluminum smelting. A major mining facility in Norilsk, Russia, is another example. This city of 180,000 puts vast energy resources to work producing nickel, but the frigid temperatures and excess energy in this region make it a perfect candidate for BitCluster's newest mining farm. The nature of the Bitcoin protocol and mining dynamics force miners to seek progressively cheaper energy sources, and that means utilizing renewable, wasted, and stranded energy. Bitcoin is not taking gas from your car or electricity from your house. It is making power production more efficient, utilizing otherwise stranded energy sources and helping to fund the development of renewable energy technologies. These are the early days. All that said about the production and consumption of energy related to Bitcoin, we must note that Bitcoin is still a very early and emergent technology. This may be hard to tell when the headlines are full of mentions of new price levels and whirring mining machines, but people, companies, and power producers are still catching on to Bitcoin. The evolution we are watching is not a 5 to 10 year process. It's a 20 to 100 year one. Focusing too closely on what's happening today or in the last few years is missing the forest for the trees. Bitcoin mining is not a consumer technology like the television or mobile phone. It is an industrial technology that requires heavy energy infrastructure, more akin to airplanes, automobiles, and the telephone, which required new physical infrastructure to be installed, airports, roads, and telephone lines. Energy production is a foundational, complex, and deeply ingrained technology. It will not be revolutionized overnight. We must consider the long arc of history when we evaluate potential impacts of a new technology like Bitcoin as it relates to energy. In Bitcoin's case, the novel technology provides energy producers a radically new way to monetize energy, and as a result, it will permeate every energy production site across the globe. This will push down the profitable price of energy for all miners, driving more energy efficiency as wasted, stranded, and renewable sources with near zero or below zero energy cost are sought out to power mining facilities. The casino that saved the Earth. Bitcoin may just be a casino for degenerate gamblers, but this casino serves as the buyer of last resort for electricity produced everywhere in the world. The positive impact of the presence of a buyer of last resort in the energy market is hard to overstate. As Bitcoin disseminates throughout the world, Bitcoin mining will. 1. increase energy efficiency by utilizing wasted energy. 2. Finance the exploration of stranded and often renewable power sources. 3. Push the learning and adoption curves for renewable energy. That sounds a whole hell of a lot more environmentally friendly than paper straws. So, environmentalists, if you truly believe in saving our Earth, take a deeper look at this technology and the role it plays in energy markets. If you'd prefer to chase clout at the expense of making a real impact, crying wolf is probably easier. Many thanks to the Bitcoin critics, supporters, and observers who have done so much researching, analyzing, and sharing to help us learn more about Bitcoin energy utilization and expose misconceptions. All right, and that was Evan Bayless and Bitcoin Will Save Our Earth. Let's take a quick break for our sponsor, and I want to get into Guy's take on this piece. Do you seriously not have a f***ing Bitcoin savings account with Swan Bitcoin yet? Okay, maybe you're in Europe or something. Okay, I get it, but otherwise, what the f***? It's so f***ing easy. You literally f***ing sign up for it, and then it just works. Are you stressing the f*** out watching 5-minute charts like you're gonna beat some Wall Street trading algorithms like a f***ing noob? Why? That's like working full-time to give your sats to somebody else. Bitcoin returns are the highest f***ing returns of any asset in the f***ing world for the past 10 years. Why are you trying to beat the best performing asset ever? Just buy it while it's in 5 digits. Low fees, easy to use, f***ing automatic. Swan f***ing Bitcoin. And use my referral, swanbitcoin.com/guy, and you even get sats with it that are f***ing free. Just do it. This ad was not approved by swanbitcoin.com.
One of the most important things that I think, like, to get through to people who, who hold this fallacy, I think people who genuinely think that Bitcoin is a terrible thing for the environment, literally don't think past step one. They don't think at all about the economic incentives, because when you start putting the pieces together, and when you look at the trends of the mining industry that we have already seen, it is incredibly competitive. And as Evan talks about in this piece, there are only like 3 major factors to change in order to be more competitive, and the only one that's always present and that always may have some potential to improve in some way is pretty much energy. Like, that's the one, the cost of your energy. But something that I try to get across whenever I'm talking to anybody about this, that is so, that they literally, this is not something that even goes through their heads, is that, and it's a quote from Evan says in this piece, says, Bitcoin is not taking gas from your car or electricity from your house. It is making power production more efficient, utilizing otherwise stranded energy sources and helping to fund the development of renewable energy technologies. If I had to sum up this whole article and the whole position of will Bitcoin destroy the planet, it would be that. Bitcoin is not taking a single watt of energy from Main Street businesses or from residential houses. It cannot, Bitcoin mining cannot turn a profit in those scenarios. And the few times where maybe for like a week it does is when the price skyrockets. And it just so happens that even normal energy sources are profitable for like a very, very short time before another flood of miners come in and correct it back down in the competition, fiercely pushes it back to the cheapest energy sources that can possibly be found. And funny enough, the cheapest energy sources are almost always renewable energy. And not specifically even because of the cost of production of that energy, but because of the amount of waste that that energy has. Because in so many cases, it's produced in a place that's inaccessible or at a time that is inaccessible. And Bitcoin being there, mining being there as a buyer of last resort, is a huge deal to make exactly those sorts of projects actually viable. That's this end of that quote, it says helping to fund the development of renewable energy technologies. Evan doesn't go into this analogy specifically, but let's say, like the Sahara Desert, like solar panels is a really great example because there are no customers there, right? You can't plug those solar panels up into any other customers. It's probably hundreds, maybe even thousands of miles away from useful civilization to speak of, you know, maybe some village with like 40 people, but not like customers that could soak up all of the sun, all of the energy that the sun is blasting onto the Sahara Desert. I mean, it's a desert for a reason. You know, it's a massive amount of available energy, but nobody wants to live there because it's a desert. So that's just a decent example of an energy source that just we can't really do anything with. And this is the case for a lot of renewable energy. I mean, just think about it from an investment standpoint. Is let's say there is a dam, there's a great location and a body of water that could benefit and create an incredible amount of hydroelectric power. But it's like 500 miles or something, whatever just shy of the limit is of how far we can transport electricity viably. And from the nearest civilization, from the nearest large city or whatever, it just so happens to be like just kind of within that threshold so that people would actually consider it. Then they do the math on it. They're like, all right, it'll take this long to build. This is how much capital it'll cost. And then it will take this many years to build out the lines and the infrastructure needed to actually reach our customers. And in 12 years, it will begin to turn a profit. And, you know, it's like the first 3 years are building the plant, and the rest of that whole time is the fact that they can only sell 50% or 60% of the energy that the dam produces to the people they're connected to. And then it's like, you know, 7 years or so to get all the infrastructure out to connect to all the nearest cities. Now imagine as soon as that dam is complete and producing any amount of power, you can plug it into a Bitcoin miner and you can sell it for half the price that you would sell it to a normal customer, or fourth of a price. I mean, it would have been thrown away anyway. You've gotten nothing, absolutely nothing out of it. So you have competition. You know, miners will come in and plug into the dam, and you can sell power for the entire time that you are building out infrastructure to actually get to the customer. And then after you've completed the infrastructure, still only like 60% of the energy can actually be used by those people, because turns out a whole lot of the dam, it just so happens that the dam ends up producing a whole lot of energy at night and everybody's asleep and nobody's using anything. So a whole lot of it gets just pushed into the ground. Who's there to buy it? Bitcoin miners, always. To make it vastly more efficient. Now you've got a project that was going to be profitable, or was actually going to make a return in like 11 or 12 years. The investors are just like, you know, some bunch of billionaires or whatever. Like, I gotta wait 11 years. Am I going to invest all of this money and let that capital sit and risk on this project that might not even go through, might not even complete? And then you're just going to soak it all up, and I'm going to get my first like little pittance in 11 or 12 years. Now, what if because of Bitcoin mining, because Bitcoin miners can come in and start buying that energy instantly, what if that proposition is 5 years? What if the proposition is 5 years, and rather than an unknowable amount of pay at the end of it, you can estimate exactly what it might pay? Because you can set it up beforehand that you would sell all of the energy to Bitcoin miners, and you wouldn't even have to worry about the threshold. Like, how much of it is consumed? Well, it's every single bit that we can produce is consumed. And that is solely because you have a buyer, you have an energy consumption tool that demands the very cheapest energy possible and has virtually no temporal or geographic limitation whatsoever. Doesn't matter what time it's produced. Doesn't matter where it's produced. Pick them up, drop them off, plug them in. As Evan said in the piece, it says Bitcoin mines are the least location-dependent consumers of energy on the planet. That is a huge deal. And people who just dismiss this or just point it, just, you know, break out their calculator and just get some megawatt number of this is what Bitcoin uses, is the most thoughtless, ignorant crap. Like, do you know anything about economics? It's like, I get it, okay? It's easy. It's so easy. But for somebody who calls themselves an environmentalist and wants to actually make an impact, you don't get to be that lazy. I get it from like a normie. I get it from somebody who isn't gonna figure it out anyway, and they don't care. They just read some article headline or something that just went across their feed on Twitter. They were never gonna read the article. They were never gonna dig into it. They just retweet it and be like, Bitcoin is gonna boil the oceans. But if you're like a professional, you have no excuse. You have no excuse to demonize the very thing that's actually going to save your ass when you have no good solution. None. You know, all of the subsidies, like the idea of a subsidy is just so stupid on its face, because it's trying to push something that's economically not viable, that we know doesn't work. And to push additional costs on society only causes poverty and starvation. It literally destroys the very wealth and prosperity that makes people able to care about the environment and how clean they are. When people are poor and they can't, they're you know, living hand to mouth, they don't give a shit about how much stuff they throw away. They don't care at all about the environment. That is a luxury of wealthy people. Starving people crap in the river and they don't care. But the idea that you're going to get the government to make something profitable that isn't profitable is the exact same thing of, oh, we're going to do price controls on bread to make it cheaper. It doesn't change the underlying supply. All it does is create scarcity. You can't fight the market. All it does is lie about what the reality is. It's the same as putting your sails against the wind so that it's pushing you in the direction you don't want to go, and then telling everybody to row on the boat in the right direction. It is just putting up a giant resistance to everything that you want to do. If you don't have an economic solution, if your solution to the energy problem isn't an innovation, it is just a criticism and a stick that you're going to beat the right person and tell them to stop doing what is most viable, then it's not a solution. A stick is not a solution. Hurting people is not a solution to the environmental problem. And yet that is what 99% of environmentalists think is going to solve everything. Is that we're just going to hate all of the people who consume energy. It just feels like such an anti-human religion. And they can't think about the things that would actually make a difference, that actually have the incentives and the trends to have a real impact. It's almost like it would be bad for us to figure something out, because then they'd have nothing to complain about. And certainly that's not all of them. I mean, I consider myself an environmentalist, technically. Like, I care about the environment. I don't want to be wasteful, but I don't want to do things that have absolutely no impact or that actually have a huge net negative impact just because they sound great or flowery or because that happens to be the government propaganda today. And there is a lot of that going on. There's a great talk, actually. It's a TED Talk. I think it was about nuclear energy, I think. I watched it sometime recently, and he talked about, and I went and dug into a couple of like studies about the marginal return on wind and solar power in particular, because there's such disparate sources of energy, and that there's potentially no way to ever have all of your energy from solar and wind, because of when it is produced, and that actually after some like 15 or 20% threshold, and I think this might have been different based on the makeup of the country and like the geography, it varies, but basically there's some threshold where when at the beginning you'd put in one solar panel and you would get one unit of energy out of it, that at like 20% saturation, you put in one solar panel and you get 0.8 units of energy. And then you put in a solar panel and you get 0.6 units of energy. Like the more and more solar panels or the more and more wind energy you put in after a certain threshold, you've already gotten the bulk of what viable energy you can out of it. So even when those energies are lower cost, they basically get higher cost and less economical the more you actually rely on them, because they are at such, they have such a variance in, I mean, the production has absolutely nothing to do with the consumption, right? It does no, it does not, the windmill does not care 1 cent, or the wind doesn't care 1 cent about when you want to turn on your air conditioning, or, you know, how many great shows there are on TV tonight. They have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And because of that, the amount of viable energy that can be that can actually be used out of these energy sources gets lower and lower the more and more you lean on them. And that technically, from that context, there may be no way without some huge battery, some incredible breakthrough in making house-sized batteries. There's essentially no way to be fully dependent on something like solar and wind. They are at best supplementary energy sources, even though they are they're the poster child of environmentalist energy sources, even though that's actually not the case. Both of them are actually pretty destructive in their own ways to the environment, particularly if we're talking about like emissions. Is that yes, solar panels last for a very long time, and probably on net after you've had them for a huge span, and they can, if they continue to produce energy. And obviously solar panels get much more efficient over time. This is actually the most exciting thing about solar panels, is that they are they've become an information technology, right? So the cost of it comes down very, very quickly over time. And it has. Last 10, 20 years, the cost of a watt of solar energy has absolutely plummeted because of new technology and constant improvements in it. It's become an information technology. It's kind of benefiting from a Moore's Law sort of progression, which is great. That's an amazing development. But this is exactly why you don't subsidize it. This is exactly why you do not build a whole bunch of infrastructure while the technology is still crappy. The analogy I use, and exactly what happened in the U.S., why the U.S. has such crappy internet versus a lot of the modern world, our internet infrastructure is pretty dog shit. And the reason is because the government gave like a multi-billion dollar subsidy. And what it actually did, and this was years ago, to bring quote-unquote broadband, but subsidizing a fast-moving technology is the absolute worst thing that you can do, because you subsidize it at one point in its life cycle. So imagine if we, and in a way this is exactly what we did, but the analogy works better with 56K modems. Let's say to bring everybody internet, the government spent $100 billion or some stupid amount of money subsidizing the internet during dial-up days. And instead of having the market rush to innovate and compete with the incumbents by providing better service and laying out new infrastructure, what they did is they tripled down on phone lines. And the giants, the big phone giants, or the big dial-up internet giants, went around and bought up all the small competitors and started laying out phone line like crazy. And for longer than we normally would have, we've now got more people on the internet because they've laid out tens of thousands of miles of phone line to all sorts of different communities and stuff. But now we have no capital to actually upgrade, and they've bought up all the small competitors, so there's almost no competition. What happens is that more people get shitty internet, and it takes that much longer for us to upgrade to the better technology. Whereas normally, the small competitors would have been the ones that pushed us to broadband. It would have pushed us to multi-layer and a much higher density cable network, internet services, and then fiber services, and on and on and on. It is because of the competition, is because of the breadth of the market. But that's essentially what we did. That is essentially what the United States did. And in fact, I didn't know the reasoning for this when I was younger, but I saw it happening, and it was kind of annoying. We had like we literally, in our hometown, when I was little, we had like something like Bob's Cable or something like that. It was a stupid local thing. It was just a small company. And in like one town over, the kind of bigger city that was in our area, which is not a big city, but that was what I thought of it as a time. You had quite a few options over there as well. And they were all things that you wouldn't have heard of. It was like Fox's Fast, your Fox's High Speed, and you know, it was just a bunch of little random names. And then throughout my like kind of middle school and high school years, they all got bought up. They all got bought up. It all became Charter, I think, at the time. And then like Time Warner, I think, bought Charter. I don't know. But basically, there was a massive amount of consolidation in the industry. Just huge consolidation. All the little guys just basically vanished. And I always wondered, it was just like, oh, well, that sucks. But, you know, whatever. I still got internet and all that good stuff. And it wasn't until many, many years later that I actually started looking into the history of all that and what happened. And all of that consolidation happened after the government made massive subsidized, investments in broadband. And they basically just gave it to the giant incumbents, to the largest companies, as kickbacks. And what did those companies do? They just went around and bought up all the small competitors. That's what they used the subsidy to do. They didn't bring internet to people. They just bought up everybody who was who was their competition. So if your solution to the environmental problem requires punishing or hurting people or subsidizing people that are just going to do that, I mean, that's the reality. That is the reality. Whatever dream or hopium you have about what that subsidy is going to do, that is what it actually does. Well, then it's not a solution. It's not a solution. You're not having any impact on the actual problem. And it is not an economically sustainable solution that actually takes us into the future. It puts us into a place of, it puts us into a poverty mindset of, we shouldn't use this, or we shouldn't do anything, or we shouldn't be prosperous because this is evil and terrible. A tweet I said just the other day, actually, was that there is no, I can't remember exactly, but the prosperity is deeply tied to, actually, I think Evan said something along these lines in this, is that the wealth and prosperity of human civilization is deeply tied to how much energy each person has to consume. I think he said it just correlates in this piece, but I think it's an extremely easy, logical connection that the more we are able to have other energy work for us, the more we are able to have a washing machine uses more energy than using a washboard by hand. A washing machine definitely uses more energy. A dryer, same story. A stove, same story. They use more energy because they are doing the job for us. But that is exactly what frees us up to complete other tasks, to do higher value tasks, find a better solution, to find new sources of energy, and to care about things that we otherwise would not have the time to care about. When you're hungry and when your family is destitute or just barely making it by, you care about food. That's it. You care about getting to the next day. And when someone comes in and starts talking about their little problems, or, you know, what's happening over in this other state or other country, or that this desert's getting bigger, they do not care. They do not care. They want you out of their face, and they want you to shut the hell up because they have problems. If your solution to the energy problem isn't an energy innovation, you are going nowhere. You are doing nothing. I don't know how many times we'll have to hit this topic on the show. the energy FUD is probably going to last forever, because there are so many people who I feel have the exact wrong mindset. And I probably got really accusatory in this piece, and I don't mean to. It just gets me worked up, because I see people who claim to care about the environment and then have no solution. Their solution is to complain over and over and over and over again, and then hate other people for not, quote unquote, fixing it on Twitter, of all things. You know, like, delete your social media. Do you have any idea how much energy Twitter uses, if that's your freaking measure for whether or not something is good or bad? And learn a little bit about sound money, too. Because sound money is so, so painfully the source of so much of our waste and inefficiency. It's unbelievable. If you want to figure out, if you are actually serious and you've got like one humble bone in your entire body, learn a little bit about sound money and fiat money, what the difference is and what fiat incentivizes. Because you might just not know as much as you think you do. But, you know, whatever. That's my rant. Thank you to our sponsors. What's today's Bitcoin resource? Hold on a second. Oh, wait, no, it's going to be a news thing. I've got something really crazy happen on this topic in particular, so we'll hit it in just a second. A huge thank you to our sponsor, Swan Bitcoin. SwanBitcoin.com/guy is my referral link. That is the automatic, no-hassle savings plan for your Bitcoin buying, auto DCA, and then the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet for the people who love their keys and want to keep them safe. Check them both out at guyswanwith2ns.com. But the little news item that I wanted to share is that Kentucky has passed a law. It has passed a law, and it actually went through very quickly, and it was overwhelmingly in support. The lawmakers were overwhelmingly in support of this law, the Senate in Kentucky, for incentivizing minors to come to the state. And I think this absolutely has to do with this nature of Bitcoin mining, is that it can make energy production so much more efficient and so much more profitable, because it can consume energy at every single place and at every single time that it's found. Anywhere that energy exists and can be utilized, it can now basically be utilized. But the law basically exempts them from sales tax and use tax on both the on any of the property and equipment around buying miners or setting up miners, like all of the things to set up a miner, and then the electricity consumed. So there's just no use or sales tax on setting up and mining Bitcoin in Kentucky. And I think we'll see this, you know, as much as the arrogant environmentalists who refuse to actually learn economics, wink, wink, poke, poke, as much as they'll rail against it and hate it, there are probably going to be a lot of friendly states that try to bring it into their state, potentially even just to meet federal regulations. That's why a lot of the other energy production and like natural gas facilities and oil wells are actually doing this, is so that they can meet the regulations or restrictions on exactly how much carbon and or emissions and or waste they're allowed to have. And then we've got systems like, companies like CT that was created by the Norwegian oil giant. I can't remember the Aker. So Aker created CT, and it's largely for this exact purpose, is that they are creating CT as a subsidiary to discover and experiment and work on projects, not only just to build out the Bitcoin ecosystem, but more importantly, build out the infrastructure and expand its potential in eliminating waste all across the energy production industry. And that was one of his explicitly stated purposes, is that this is how we could actually meet regulations that are a huge cost right now, and turn that from an incredible liability and a friction on the business and on the production of energy, and instead turn it into a benefit They can turn wasted energy, they can turn a liability into an asset because Bitcoin mining exists. And this is going to continue. This is going to continue. And the fact that we are seeing this industry explode in response to it, like there are whole companies that are devoted to exactly this. Evan actually mentions a couple of them right here in this piece. And a lot of already incumbent industries are thinking about and making shifts to account for this exact thing. This is becoming a thing because the economics is so incredibly strong for exactly this. And, you know, a lot of people like try to dance around it, you know, like even with the CT shareholder letter, they constantly said it may be beneficial. It could potentially be beneficial. It sounds like it might be beneficial. Like I hear a lot of that language over and over again. And I really appreciate Evan in this is that it will be a huge net positive, and it is not a, if they're going to not beat around the bush, if the other side of things, the people who are ignorant and don't even bother thinking about it are going to go say something as absolutely absurd as Bitcoin is going to boil the oceans, which you have to be a five-year-old child. You have to stop thinking at the elementary level to think something so stupid. But if that's what you're going to say, if that's what they're going to say about it, we should not hold back with our language. We should not be, oh, well, it seems like the economic incentives would tend to make it sound like maybe it's going to be beneficial. No, Bitcoin is going to save the planet, and your stick isn't going to do anything. The incentives absolutely line up. These whole companies would not be created otherwise. If this was truly unviable, why is there an industry blowing up over it? Upstream Data, Crusoe Energy, Giga Energy, CT and Acre, the plant in New York that put on a lot of miners, that just recently announced, I saw somewhere, a all-in-one like mining setup thing. It's like an infrastructural box that is literally closed. Like the whole thing produces its own energy and then mines. It's like you basically just plug it in. I didn't actually look deep into the details about this thing, but it just seemed really cool. It was supposedly a completely self-sustaining, deployable Bitcoin miner that produced all of its own energy. I'm sure I saved it somewhere in my get back to and actually dig into, but it seemed like a really cool concept. But that's exactly what, you know, all this is. There's massive amounts of innovation happening around this. And as the mining industry becomes more matured, it is going to be married to the energy sector, to energy production just in general. And the economics suggest this. The economics have been saying this. The incentives and the trends have been saying this since the very beginning. And they've been, like Bitcoiners have been speculating on this potential future and talking about these dynamics for years and years and years, and they are clearly and obviously becoming true. People are using Bitcoin miners to heat their homes. And I think, again, there's still a company that is working on trying to figure out how to make a miner into a home heater. And I think the ability to actually use heat, there was a, that was in Sweden. Oh, I'm going to get it wrong because I'm just remembering this. I didn't even put it in my notes. But there's actually a company that is working with local farmers, local food producers, even in like urban areas that have a very, very low margin and have essentially been unable to compete with the food giants. So the idea here was that particularly like greenhouses that are trying to grow food in an urban area and or a climate that is not very friendly to growing a lot of food, their biggest cost and the reason their margins usually can't be met, that the project itself is not really viable against what you're going to get at the grocery store from, you know, some huge conglomerate. So you're going to buy food that's from thousands of miles away and you don't know anything about it or where it grew or, what went into it. One of the biggest costs is heat. It's heat. It's heating the greenhouse so that even when the weather is not right or it's too cold, they can still produce food. And that those margins are small, right? Like anything in a competitive market, the margins are really, really small. But there's been no local, because that's such a huge cost and it's just a sunk cost. Like there's no other benefit and there's no alternative way to produce it outside of just burning the energy and throwing it away. You get the heat, period. Well, there's actually a company that's working with local farmers, local food producers and greenhouses to set up Bitcoin miners to actually heat the greenhouse so that their biggest cost is cut like 50% or even 80% depending on the profitability of the miner itself. And of course, what the price of Bitcoin is doing over that period, but that you could cut down a huge, huge slice of that cost and actually make local production of food viable. It basically gives them an edge over the huge conglomerate that is essentially too big and unwieldy to make that sort of a shift. It's such a huge investment and shift for them. And then more importantly is that the locality of where they have their food, which is their benefit, is that they're growing it in a cheaper, easier area, is that benefit is now diminished. So what was an advantage now actually becomes a disadvantage because they have to send the food so far, whereas the local producer can just harvest, go down to the grocery store and sell their food or sell it directly in the market. And that margin that let the conglomerate get such an advantage over them has come down steeply. So not only will Bitcoin probably save the planet, but it'll also give us local organic foods. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. I am Guy Swan. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you, Evan Bayless, and everybody. Until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.